Good evening. I'm Gail Brewer. Hi, Jolie. And I'm glad to have you here. I'm sorry to be late. I chair the technology committee. I'm here with Kunal Malhotra from our office, and I know people from Do It are on their way. This is a huge turnout, and I am very appreciative. The reason we're here is that there is, as you know, money coming from Washington. I have no idea if every single penny will come to New York City. That's what I would love. But the fact of the matter is that I have always believed, as chair of the technology committee, with the help of many people in this room, that the community, in addition to the agencies, would be able to get some of that funding. And the fact of the matter is, for the last couple of years, working with Dean David Birdsell and the broadband committee, we have been going to all boroughs, working with the Department of Information Technology and Telecommunications and with the mayor's office, listening to people who have major broadband concerns. And I think everybody in this room, I don't need to repeat it, knows what those are. As a result of all of that, one of the areas that the Diamond Consultants, working with EDC and with the mayor's office, identified and are places like home and school, senior centers, places where there are industrial locations without any opportunity for connectivity, and just in general low-income families. And the general consensus was that places where there is sustainable opportunity for computer training centers, be it in senior centers, Beacon after school programs, public buildings like places where there are libraries, where libraries are, or any place else where there's a public accessible, would be places where some of this stimulus money might go so that families and individuals who don't have opportunities could get it. And then, of course, I think, well, what about the nonprofit community, the small business community, and how do they also access? And so what we're here today to talk about is how we can partner with some of these ideas. And I think the discussion will be very open. I know there are people here from the department, from Do It, coming in a few minutes, and there are people who have been part of these discussions. The timing is very tight. All of you know better than I that I think it's August 14th, this is all supposed to be in, and then we have to spend it quickly. The issue is that hopefully we will have partners that come out of this discussion so you can partner with other groups. It's hard to be able to do it by yourself if you're a small organization or even a large organization. I know there are people here from health and from arts. I'm not as well-versed, but Do It may be with the funding that's coming for electronic health records or things that the city Department of Health is doing. And the fact of the matter is that in all cases, I want to make sure that people who are interested in being part of broadband and making sure that the digital divide goes away as much as we possibly can, know what's going on and are part of the discussion. So I'd like to ask if it's okay for a few minutes, Dean Birdsell, to say a few minutes as part of it. And I see the great Joshua Breitbart, who was able to, with John Albert and others, secure this space. And I'm sure that Josh has put a great deal of time, Joshua, into this issue will also help. Dean, why don't you start? Just say a few words.
Good evening, everyone. Very pleased to be here, and I am thrilled to see so many people out here tonight to address this very important opportunity that we have on such a very, very short timeline. Let me just say a couple of things about partnership. And Councilmember Brewer made very plain that that should be understood in the broadest possible sense and genuinely as an opportunity rather than an obligation. One of the things that we consistently heard as we went from borough to borough and asked people about the gaps in their broadband accessibility and in what they wanted to see in new broadband regime, should we ever be able to construct such a thing, is to fill in gaps in service, that people might be able to get service in a library, but then they go home and they don't necessarily have broadband subscriptions and perhaps, depending on the status of cabling in their building, perhaps not the availability of broadband services in that building. Perhaps people have it at home, but they don't have it at a senior center where they go and spend most of their day. And we're looking at these gaps as significant barriers to uptake. And if you look at the language of this RFP talks not solely, although certainly it does cover, issues of physical access or access to a beam that allows you to get onto to the net in some fashion. Okay, there's a physical access question, the technical question, but there's also the behavioral uptake question. What are people doing online? Are people taking advantage of physical capacity that may be, or economic capacity that may be within their reach? And you in this audience have more knowledge about places where some of the programmatic efforts, substantive in nature, that may be delivered online can marry to the relatively more purely technical plays in ways that can expand people's willingness to appetite for broadband uptake, as well as simply the sheer fact of being next to a pass-through cable. I'd like to make one other point and then turn this back over to Councilmember Brewer. What will happen over the course of the next few months as proposals make their way down to Washington, and as they are blessed in Washington, is that we will have several score natural experiments occurring simultaneously in the five boroughs of New York. And we will ideally be able to say, well, gee, now we know a little bit more about what kind of intervention makes it more likely that low-income seniors will actually pick up a broadband subscription. Now we know what kind of intervention will make it more likely that people in middle school are going to use services to do homework or whatever it might be, okay? But, just a moment, sir. But we won't know that unless we have evaluation tools that walk across those various experiments. And one of the meet and greet things that I would like you to talk about with one another, if at all possible tonight, and I know that there are a number of people in this room who are interested in evaluation. If we can get evaluation that will go across projects, okay, sensitive to the needs of individual projects, but so that we'll have metrics that can look at what people are doing with seniors over here, over here, over here, and over here, and get some sense of what works best. Who are working with middle school students over here, over here, over here, and over here, and get a sense of what works best. In addition to being the right thing to do, it's something that's going to make every one of these proposals that has a really robust evaluation component more likely to get funded. So I just like to put in a plug to think about that. Oftentimes, evaluation is that thing that we sort of, oh my God, I've got 2 months left on the project. How am I evaluating it, right? Let's think about that out of the gate, and that really gives us a chance to make this whole project much more effective.
We'll take questions in a minute, but let's hear from Joshua Breitbart.
Well, thank you very much. It is really great to see everybody here. My name is Joshua Breitbart. I'm the policy director with People's Production House. We have our office right around the corner. We teach digital media courses in public schools and with community organizations around the city. And these days, we call that sustainable broadband adoption programs. I'm actually just wondering, how many people here attended or testified at one of the Broadband Advisory Committee hearings? Okay, maybe like half the room. How many people here responded to the RFI from Do It last month? Okay, maybe like a third of folks or so. So that's the position that People's Production House is in. And, you know, in talking to Councilmember Brewer and her staff, and just saying, like, you know, we've been having these conversations, and now we really have this opportunity. You know, let's start driving the process forward. And I think there was sort of a weight of, like, well, who's going to go first? Is Do It going to come out with a plan responding to that RFI? And I've also been working with a group called the Open Technology Initiative. We've been consulting with some cities and organizations around the country, and I think what we've seen is that this really has to be a community-driven process. And that's the thing that really gets the city to get everything in motion. And, you know, where are really the pieces that all have to be plugged together for this to work? I think that that's what we learned really over the course of all of the Broadband Advisory Committee meetings. So I want to thank Dean Burtzell and Councilmember Brewer for all of their work to bring everybody here and for those hearings. And looking forward to talking with all of you more about how we can collaborate on these proposals.
Just so you know, Doers on their way. They're not here yet, but and they can do an overview. Unless are they here? Okay, then pull up a chair. Whoever's here, Jenny. I don't know who's here. I think if we want to take some questions, Do It can do an overview. Obviously, as some of you who work with the city or have responded to RFPs, they cannot be specific because that is going to hamper their ability to be fair and level the playing field in terms of their looking at the proposals. But they can answer any questions that are in a general nature. But if there are some specific questions now about anything, we'd be glad to take them. You had a question? Does somebody have a question? Okay, yeah. You want to wait? Okay.
6:30.
What? 6:30 is due. Okay, so it's coming in a little while. In the interim, why don't we? Are there any questions at all? Is anybody thinking of applying? And if so, what aspect of this are you thinking about? I know Oates is, so go ahead and back up. Go ahead.
My name is Alan Rogers. I'm from a not-for-profit called Fed Time and Learning Network.
Can everybody hear?
No.
My name is Elvin Rogers. I have a not-for-profit called FedTime, the Learning Network, and we provide online education to Harlem communities, and we also want to get involved in the South Bronx. So I'm trying to determine how I can best be a part of this. We have to collaborate with the organization that has broadband technology. So I'm interested in from the educational perspective, and how can I provide online learning to be a part of this? So
okay.
Someone can answer that question.
And anybody should jump in. The issue for this specific proposal is that if there were folks interested in some of these areas that I described in the Bronx or wherever else you want to work, which are working to think of ways that there's more access for families, work and school, seniors, something that would bring the knowledge that you have on a larger basis to more people. Now, obviously in the Bronx, I'm probably in trouble for saying this. SoBro has been very involved with the broadband task force and has a great relationship. Certainly Prescolis has a great deal of relationship, a lot of nonprofits around the city. Certainly Mount Hope, some of you know Sean Bell, who's been head of that for a long time, has a great deal of cachet and has been doing a lot of work. So those are the three organizations that I know of that are large and that have put in a great deal of time in terms of thinking broadly about this issue. But there are many others in the Bronx. But I would just say that those would be some examples of people I know who are thinking of applying for this funding. Yes. Go ahead.
I'm Dave Pentecost.
Why don't you stand up, Dave, so people can hear.
Dave Pentecost from the Lower East Side Girls Club. We're building a large facility on Avenue D. Community Center, Science Technology Center. I have some comments about that later, but just a general question. In terms of applying, are we each group applying on our own, or are we presenting to the city and you're going to be applying for the fund?
Yeah. So it seems like the strongest applications are the ones done collaboratively, and that we're going to do much better if we can come together in some fashion rather than compete. That's my opinion, the assessment of the application from me and my colleagues. If we can, you know, it's maybe a tall order to get everybody together in a short amount of time. There are multiple rounds. So,
but the RFIs that we filled out, that we sent in, those were purely informational, but are those going to be assessed and put together and partners found? How is that doing?
That's a question for DeWitt, I think.
When DeWitt gets here, we'll ask them. It's a good question, Dave. But I think in your case, you're open long hours, kind of place that you already do a lot of education, so on and so forth. Maybe you could be like a center for the activity that goes on in the Lower East Side. I don't know. But I'm just saying is you are poised to be.
Well, our goal is to get a fat pipe to that part of Manhattan.
Yeah.
It's a big blank spot. The whole bump of the Lower East Side, there's no fiber, there's nothing.
Okay, so that's a perfect example of what this money's for.
NYSERNet, and yep. NYSERNet is I think a possibility for a partner for a lot of this. But
does everybody know what NYSERNet is? Everybody know?
New York State Educational Research Network has a huge broadband super fat pipe all over the state and connects to internet too and everything else. Comes down the middle of Manhattan. I've been told it would cost us $150,000 just to get our fiber over to Lower Sixth Avenue and Canal Street, where
is the school place closer to you than?
Well, I've talked to NYSERNet.
Okay, that's not.
Why
don't
you say NYSERNet?
Yeah.
Let's not go back and forth. Let's talk about that.
I'd love to hear about that. We need to know about that.
Okay.
In any case, the point is, we need to get significant bandwidth to that part of the. downtown, and we'd be happy to partner with other people in terms of use of that and the facility. We're 2 years out from that facility being built, but we need to make plans for the fiber now.
Fabulous. Okay, there was a question over here. Yeah, go ahead.
It's not so much a question. It's just that I've spoken to five or six people here so far, and I've noticed that there's some services that we are creating which may be appropriate for everybody. Our company is called Share the Access. We're launching in September. I will leave my name and details with the people here. If you or your organizations or the people in your areas that you represent are interested in solving the problem on the executive summary outlined as, well, basically cost. One of the big issues here says failure to perceive value in broadband adoption, significant lag in broadband adoption by low-income residents. If these things ring in your ears and say, well, we can get it, but we can't pay for it, if that means something to you and you want to find a cheaper way of getting access, we have the solution. And we're very, very interested in reaching out to the community and finding all sorts of different communities, community groups, individuals who actually want to solve that problem, because we think we can solve it for you in a very simple way. And when we launch, we'd like to tell you about it in our alpha stage and maybe
okay.
have you guys test.
All right, you should know that there will be a listserv. Everybody who signs in will be on it, so you'll be able to find them. Anybody else? Yes, go ahead.
Share the access.
Yeah. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, my name is Eran Velo, and I'm a VP marketing from Rancom Technologies, a company based in Israel. We are a WiMAX equipment manufacturer, and I wonder if there are any ISPs here, internet service providers, that are looking for the broadband infrastructure program that need the equipment. We run special programs, and I'm very happy to collaborate.
Thank you very much. Again, everything will be on the listserv. Mr. Oates, will you talk a little bit about Tom Camber, about what you're up to? Because this is a very exciting program. If you don't know Oates, you haven't met a fabulous program thinking about these issues.
Yeah, my name is Tom Camber. I'm the Executive Director of Older Adults Technology Services, and we're a citywide group that runs programs in partnership with 30 different nonprofit community-based partners around the city. Hi. And we responded to the RFI and are kind of waiting in a way to see what the city's doing on this round, hoping that they're putting something together for seniors. And I know there's so much uncertainty, and we'll hear from DO IT today in terms of what they're doing. So, you know, I think a lot of people have put out ideas and plans. We're hoping to do work both helping to outfit community-based centers around the city, and then provide training centrally and also through capacity building for the different sites. And I think similar in some ways to what the Girls Club is doing, eventually try to move this into developing a facility where people can come down and have a location where they can have access to higher level services for seniors and also intergenerational programming. I think at this point in terms of partnering, we're still waiting to hear what the city is putting in from DO IT. And so if there is a substantial amount of resources that they're going to then turn around and distribute out to the senior community, we're interested in hearing people, working with people who have interest in connecting to seniors, intergenerational programming, and other connections with older adults around healthcare, workforce, and other sort of themes that we focus on. And I think for the second round, we may be trying to fill in gaps or look for opportunities to apply for opportunities with programs that will add on to what the city does in the first round. So, you know, there is a substantial amount of money left over from the first round, the way it's been constructed, and so we're open to talking to everybody at this point.
Is that helpful?
Yeah. Anybody else want to ask anything? Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry. Hi, I'm Rebecca from BronxNet, and we're the public access television station and community media center for the Bronx. We partner with many organizations on projects.
The people here over there?
You're from BronxNet?
Yes.
BronxNet, okay, talk up.
And we work with a lot of schools, public schools, as well as universities, and that's where we want to really focus on doing something together with public schools, universities, as well as other organizations. Over the years, we specialized in media training and getting people jobs in the industry, but we are broadening out now to all sorts of communications efforts.
I know that MNN is doing the same, and I'm sure Queens, Staten Island, and Brooklyn are doing the same. So I think that the public access stations are a huge asset in the city, and if I know you're connected with all of them, and I hope that you're part of this. Yes, go ahead.
Hi, my name is Dorita Jason,
And I'm starting a new business in the South Bronx. It's called Peace Love.
So you know the guy next to you?
Yes.
Oh, good.
And it's a helpful computer internet cafe. So I'm supplying internet access and access to other design programs for the community to learn. So for this grant, you're saying I would have to partner up with...
It's not required, but the applications that are partnerships and that have more community stakeholders are looked on more favorably. So it makes sense for us to all collaborate as much as possible in light of that.
If I could just add to that, take Peace Love. You've got the internet cafe up. It's running. It's swarming with kids, with adults, with everybody. What happens when they go home, and how do you know it? Are they at the cafe because they don't have services at home? Can the cafe serve as a point for the distribution of boxes that will get them access at home, assuming that there is a way for them to subscribe once they get there? Is there a party here who can help reduce the rates when they get home and can subscribe once they get there? And you begin to see the virtues of the partnership, right? And that's just one example. But it's not required. And I want to underscore what Josh just said. It's not required for you to partner with somebody, but when you partner, you will almost certainly, if the partnership is thoughtful, I think that goes without saying, you'll wind up with a stronger product. That's the key.
And so one more question to the room. How many people are learning about this federal funding opportunity more or less for the first time this evening? Okay. Oh, that's very helpful as well. So there's a sheet out there that I and my colleagues prepared. It's supposed to be folded together, so it's a more friendly format, but it gives a very basic overview and some of the bullet points. Yes, that's a version of it. You fold it, it's very friendly, but yeah.
Yes, go ahead.
Dennis?
Dennis Lane, Harlem Consumer Education Council. I just got back from the Northwest working with the tribes, and they're going through a very kind of similar thing, and the more collaborative you are, the better Washington is going to look at the proposal, because they just don't want to fund something that's just going to be isolated. They want to see the collaborative effort that happens within a community. And also, what we've been hearing is that if you're not in the first one, you probably won't make it into the second one, the round. Because what's going to happen is those people who didn't make it in the first one will be rolled over to the second and into the third. So, the 14th of August looks to be a kind of a drop-dead kind of situation.
Yeah, question back there. Go ahead. Mitch.
My name is Renee Giordano. I'm from the Sunset Park Business Improvement District. We have about 600 small, mostly minority-based businesses that don't have internet access, even though we do have several internet cafes. They've had trouble opening because they had trouble getting online for their own business. We have a library that's about a block away that has latchkey children there all afternoon, using all the computers that have been accessed there. And most of our community just doesn't have access to broadband in any form, whether it's Verizon, Time Warner, which happens to be located on TV, doesn't really offer it to a large portion. So I'm really hoping that, and we also have a park, Sunset Park, and I was hoping.
Let me tell you, Sunset Park has been a place that I know and Dewitt can speak for themselves, that they've been out there several times. When we had the Brooklyn hearing, you're going to laugh when you hear this, we wanted to find cable, because if we could find one cable customer, then we could say that the cable companies had to go there. So I personally, Maxine will laugh, went around looking for curtains. I said, there has to be somebody living here. But we couldn't find anybody. So I would say, if I were you and I was a bid, I would get going right now on a proposal, because Sunset Park is a place that is a perfect example of what I think this funding is for. And so I would, but they'll need some of the owners of those businesses are older. And in a survey, which you'll hear about, they, understandably feel they don't need any technology. So you're going to have to do some convincing. But I would say get going. Absolutely.
Yes. So my name is Bruce Lincoln. I'm from the Center for Technology Innovation and Community Engagement. And I think one thing to keep in mind, it's not enough just to collaborate. You have to do capability matching. So you need to make sure that your proposal really speaks to what they ask for. The broadband infrastructure area is in many respects tailored towards telcos because of the census block information that they ask for and because of the level of funding available. It's only $50 million for public computer centers. There they're asking for very stringent kind of ways in which you talk about how many people you're going to serve in that regard. And then the sustained broadband adoption, which seems to be sort of the area with the most flexibility, you know, that as well sort of has a bit of each one of the categories. So it's not enough to be an internet cafe or even partner with another organization. Can you produce this kind of proposal that in many respects is a major kind of business plan within the time, you know, that is left over? And you also have to show that not only do you have support necessarily from the city, but also do you have support from the state? Because there's a sort of a broadband council that's been set up on the state level. So you have to put all that together. And if you can put all that together, then you should think about strategically how you want to go after, say, the second, third rounds. This first round, in many respects, is weighted towards rural deployments, and that's one reason why the NOFA is written this way. So, you know, there's a lot that's going to go into being able to, like, come together very quickly and make sure you've got lots of capability and someone who can provide you with, you know, the basic broadband. And you have to make sure you're not looked at as competing against the telcos, because in the second review, the telcos can look at those finalists and shoot you out of the water if they say that what you're proposing need not happen because of the advertised speeds, which, you know, are, you know, legislated low, provide a map that says there's 100% you know, connectivity. So there's a lot of pitfalls.
Thank you. Let's go. Well, can we just hold on a second and hear from, then we can come back to you, ma'am? She's a friend of mine. Okay. I would like to thank you very much for everyone joining us. And we have Mitch Albheim and Vinnie Grippo, who are both senior staff members at Do It, and who are able, as I said earlier, you can't be specific because there will be an RFP, but you can talk generally about the proposal that has come from Washington and how you'd like to see the city generally responsive. And I think you can see there is a huge turnout tonight. It is interesting to, when Joshua asked who had what kind of information, I'd say half the room is hearing about this project for the first time, that there's funding. Half of it, people know about it. I think there's people here who are from companies as well as the nonprofit sector, and I think people are trying to figure out how they can partner. Obviously, there are people here who have got services, some people have got equipment, and some people have got content. And I said good things about Do It. What I mean. Mitch.
Yeah, hello, everyone. I'm sorry we're late. We're okay. At another meeting. My name, as Councilwoman Brewer said, is this on?
Yeah, it's on. You've got to really talk into it, and Mitch, you got to talk loud.
All right.
Move it closer to your mouth.
Okay. So my name is Mitchell Albheim. I am a general counsel deputy commissioner at New York City Do It. And I will talk about things which Councilwoman Brewer suggested we talk about, myself and Vinny. I think the first thing, though, that I want to emphasize and talk about is to support what the gentleman, and I'm sorry I forgot your name, but Bruce Lincoln. I think we should all be aware that this first of three rounds of funding is a rural proposal by the NTIA. In fact, from as far as we can tell, the rules for this round were in fact written by the RUS, Rural Utility System. The NTIA is really not accustomed to implementing programs of this scope. And I think if you look at some of the public comments that the new FCC commissioner has made and his other advisors, their top priority is bringing broadband infrastructure to the parts of the country that don't have broadband. And that puts New York City at a tremendous disadvantage. We spent an awful lot of time in Washington, not only with the NTIA, with the FCC, with Senator Schumer, with the New York City congressional delegation, arguing that adoption ought to be as much, if not more, of an emphasis of this program as infrastructure. A decision was made, and I just looking at the rules, I think it's indisputable. A decision was made that this round was going to be the deployment round. So we're doing two things right now. One is we're trying to make the best of a bad situation, which frankly means that out of $1.4 million in funding out of the total, you know, we're going to try to get the $200 million or so that we can perhaps access. And the other effort we're making is to make sure that the next two rounds don't end up like this, which, much like the other stimulus plan, is very heavily weighted against cities and toward rural communities. I can go into a lot of the specifics, but I think $1.2 billion out of the $1.6 billion has been allocated toward deployment in underserved and unserved communities, which in itself wouldn't be so bad, except for the definition of underserved is not at all what we would have suggested that underserved is. For the NTIA to say that a 40% or less adoption rate is underserved is unacceptable. I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, we know from the latest studies, the Pew studies, that there is a huge gap still, a huge digital divide gap between middle and higher income and lower income. And even lower income are now in the 50% range, supposedly. But to set your sort of standard at 40% and then you know you're not underserved, it's ridiculous. So that's the emphasis of our lobbying right now. But then we have to break this up, as I said, into two pieces. There is the lobbying piece, and there is we've been dealt what we've been dealt, and we've got to do the best out of that. So we have to try to access and make the most out of the $200 million that's been allocated basically to community centers and improving the digital divide. And that's going to be the basis of our application to the federal government. And the focus of that application will be two things. It'll be expanding community access centers, specifically libraries, very importantly, but also there'll be an in-home component of that. With the amount of money that's been allocated, we're a little bit between a rock and a hard place now. We're going to put in a very aggressive application. We're going to partner with, and I really want to, encourage people, and I'll stick around to sort of meet people after this to partner with you. But I don't think anyone should be under any illusion that of the roughly $1.4 billion that's been allocated in this round, there's really only $200 million among the whole country that's been allocated for places like New York City. And I'm sorry if I've said this in a very long-winded way, but we're extremely frustrated by that. We're lobbying.
One question that came up earlier was the RFIs that people submitted, and what would happen with that information. In other words, people did respond to some of the requests for information earlier to do it.
Yeah, the RFI, we've done a few RFIs. We've done a broadband RFI. We've done a parks RFI. We've done several RFIs. Unfortunately, the broadband RFI doesn't fit well within the parameters that the feds have set out for this round of funding, which isn't to say that there aren't some proposals. There are some proposals. I mean, there are some things we're applying for that we hope to get partnerships with. But, you know, this isn't what we expected. We didn't expect this.
Question, go ahead. Identify yourself, too.
Oh, Dorsey here.
And stand up, because it's really hard to hear you.
I don't want to be on YouTube.
Okay.
I'm a senior fellow at the Columbia Institute for Teleinformation, and I'm trying to work on a proposal for a rural community. So I'm not exactly part of this, but I've been following what you've been doing, and I think your research has been really excellent, and the materials that you put together are beyond the scope of any small community that is unserved or underserved. And something that may, I don't know why there will not be more public outrage about this. However, when you read what is required to get any points on these application,
right.
It's clear that you have to be of a certain size, 10,000. If you're a community of 3,000, you have a problem. But the biggest problem is this, that...
I'm talking about population now.
Population. The biggest problem...
There's 3,000 people in my building. Go ahead.
In a rural area, the whole town might only be 300 active parcels, okay? So that's already a problem. So in terms of the infrastructure issue, there's no one to implement this infrastructure. You cannot get the large incumbents to give you the information or be willing to partner with you or be willing to put in that infrastructure or even tell you what amount of money you could bring to the table for them to do it, okay? So if this was intended to actually reach the communities that can't get it, the reality is the incumbents are still only going to put this technology where they can make the most money,
right.
Period. So the whole structure of this particular stimulus package is somewhat misguided. And what's going to happen is the areas with the largest wealth are going to be cherry-picked. And it is not going to address those groups that cannot afford the infrastructure. And we're not even talking about the issues of the elderly that are more and more being required to fill in their forms online who don't know how to use computers. And in the rural areas, you can't do it on dial-up because you will just be timed out. So there are some very big issues, and it's not just the New York City area that's going to be kind of shortchanged in this regard. The whole thing is quite peculiar.
No, I agree. And we have meetings set up starting tomorrow with the three major providers, Verizon, Time Warner, and Cablevision.
Sorry, who's speaking?
Mitch Albama from Dillon. And you're right, and you're right, and the way things have shaken out with respect to the guidance, these providers, these businesses, who frankly, the economy is bad. For the first time, the industry is facing competition, because it used to be that Time Warner and Cablevision in New York were monopolies in their areas. But now they are competing against Verizon. So the only way for us to get them to step up, and that we are having these meetings, is frankly to show them that there is a business case, that there is a reason for them to start to serve communities that are underserved, because in the long term, these are communities that will stick with them, that there's a need, there's a loyalty, but it's not coming from Washington. I'm sorry, you're shaking your head.
Hold on a second, because there are a lot of other people who've got questions. So come on. David, go ahead.
I just wanted
David, introduce yourself.
I'm Dave Kennecost. I introduce myself to everybody else. I'm with the Lower East Side Girls Club. We're building a big facility on Avenue D. Our issue is trying to get significant bandwidth over to that part of Manhattan for our center, but also for the neighborhood. This fellow that just left came up to me and said, "You just said something that's not true in public." And I said, "Well, correct me." He said, "Have you tried going to the phone companies, the cable company?" I said, "I don't want to go to the phone companies, the cable companies. This is why we're looking at MiserNet, which is a cooperative that controls its own infrastructure. If neighborhoods can become part of this and get some backing to put in the infrastructure necessary to go into their system, then we bypass some of these problems with the incumbents. Am I just a dreamer? Is this a possibility?
No, I mean, one of our biggest problems with the way the regulations have been written is we would like to increase the bandwidth to specific community organizations, such as yours, such as libraries, such as New York City housing authorities, but the rules on that have been established for the $1.2 billion is that the only way you can access that is to provide broadband access to every single person in the community, which
you have to be an ISP.
So, I mean, we have libraries who are dying for more bandwidth, and but we can't access that $1.2 billion to provide more bandwidth. That's one of the most frustrating parts of the program.
In the back, go ahead. Go.
Hi. Bruce Klepner, New York City Community Fiber Project. We're trying to start very much the NYCERNet for New York City. And I kind of hear you when you say that while Jewish can make, potentially provide the housing authority and select city agencies with service, and libraries, not select all of them, providing service to the general population, the Jewish hands are tied, the city's hands are tied in terms of the use of franchise fibers, which is what New York City's institutional network is comprised of. The franchise agreements, the fiber optic franchise agreements, excuse me, stipulate the city not enter into any competitive usage. So it seems that the solution, much like NYCERNet, did not originate. It was originally kind of sponsored by state agencies.
What's your question?
A nonprofit entity in New York City should assume the role that NYCERNet assumed for the educational institutions and provide service to the local community.
So you want to know if that's possible. Why isn't that possible?
That is possible. Okay. I think this is the opportunity to get funding.
Mitch, can you answer the question?
I'm sorry. I'm not sure what the question is.
I think this should try to be... I think.
Okay. Here, I'll phrase a particular question. In terms of the infrastructure dollars, there's money that's available for unserved, money that's available for underserved. There's a third category.
There's one pool, yes. $1.2 billion for both unserved and underserved.
Yes, and there's a third category in there, which is populations with less than 40% adoption rate.
Which is a part of the underserved.
So the EDC's report in 2008 showed that City Housing Authority residents had a 26% subscription rate, and the borough of the Bronx overall had a 38.8% subscription rate. I wonder if a nonprofit entity, which was interested in, you know, in providing last mile services in the South Bronx, might be a viable candidate for federal funding.
Okay, so that's your question. Go ahead.
Okay. Okay, I'm going to be very, very frank and honest with you here. The study which you're referring to, the Diamond Study, the statistics are about four, maybe even five or so years old. The threshold which the feds have set up, which is a 40% adoption rate, as far as we can see from confidential data that we've gotten from our franchisees, holds up in virtually no part of the city. It's by census block, of which there are about 38,000 census blocks. So are there a handful of census blocks that have lower than a 38% adoption rate? Perhaps. But the fact is, and I think I'm sure you've seen the latest Pew study, even among people who are 20, 30, 40, 50% below the poverty level, there's a high broadband adoption, not high, but higher than 40%. So that's our problem. We have 38,000 plus census blocks with probably on two hands the number that we can count that fall below. And that just goes to my opening statement, which is, you know, This was rigged against urban areas. The only way we can get into this is by showing that contiguous census blocks have 40% or low adoption rate. And by the way, a lot of these communities that have 40% adoption rates or higher aren't even using them for internet. Anecdotally, I don't know. They have found that just the phone service alone, dialing internationally, calling internationally, is a better value than phone service. So they even hook a computer up to their broadband. They just hook up the phone. So some of these communities, they may have subscribed to broadband, but they're not really using broadband. They're using it to do a less expensive phone service internationally.
Go. Dana Loud.
Dana Spiegel, Executive Director of NYC Wireless. We're a nonprofit, as you guys know, that provides free Wi-Fi in city parks and other public spaces. I had a question related to exactly what you just said regarding the Diamond Report. Given that the data is, by your words, sufficiently out of date to be of no use in applying for any federal grant monies at all,
If I could just interrupt, it's dated for the $1.2 billion part.
Okay.
It's not dated for the part we are going to apply for, which is for the public spaces and the community access. And
okay.
I mean, will be the basis for our application.
Well, for the adoption
for the $200 million.
Okay, part. So for the adoption part of the grant funding that you had. That
right.
Data is out of date, sufficiently out of date to not be applicable for that process. My question is a very simple one, which is, given that the city as an entity actually knows a lot more than almost everyone in this room, me included, and I see a lot of other heads shaking, what information can and will the city, I guess specifically you guys, provide to all of us, meaning the citizens and business entities in New York City, in order to help us prepare either second and third round applications or any other type of applications for federal grant that will provide us with the specific accurate data about adoption rates and all of the different community dispositions throughout New York City as a whole?
I mean, that's a very fair question.
First, talking to the mic.
I'm sorry. I said it's a very fair question, and it's a question we're wrestling with. First of all, we don't know what the second and third rounds are going to look like, and when those second and third rounds come in, we have the same concerns that you do, which is, how do you find out by census block, by 40,000 census blocks, you know, which areas are eligible for funding. The federal criteria, it's inherently unfair. I can't tell you by census block. I've had meetings with the cable companies and with Verizon. They can't tell me by census block what the penetration rate is. And I think that's what I tried to tell you from the outset. The whole point of the way the first round was written was to make it impossible virtually for cities to successfully apply for that biggest chunk of money. So, you know, if the next round, for example, comes out again by census block, I can't tell you I'm going to be able to provide you with information because...
You guys have information. What information can you guys provide, regardless of what the federal guidelines are specifically asking for the applications to contain?
Dana, what would be an example of what would be helpful?
Well, how about whatever information you guys have regarding broadband adoption, broken down in whatever ways you guys have, or subscription rates that you guys, across all of the city, broken down in whatever ways you guys have. It may not be by census block, but
right.
You guys have something.
I wouldn't overestimate how much we have as compared to you have. I would suggest that, look, we all know which areas generally of the city are underserved, right? So if you're in an area or if you're serving an area that's underserved, now's the time to start surveying those areas and going out and doing that grassroots sort of, you know, hopefully next time it won't be by census area, it will be by neighborhood or something else.
Mitch, we need to, on the other hand, I appreciate your honesty. We do need, I want to make sure the people where there is some funding do apply, though, and I want people to partner. So I just want to say that that's also something positive that I want people to understand as we're going forward. So, yes, you had a question. Stand up so we can hear you.
Yes, my name is Christina Jarre, and I'm with First Polis.
Yes. I mentioned you guys earlier.
Yes. And we're looking to partner because what we found in the Diamond Study was that the one of the greatest barriers to broadband was having access to the hardware. And so we actually work with Oates in providing seniors with computers and also middle schoolers with computers in their home. And so we're looking to partner with any other providers so that we can provide the hardware so that they can then get the broadband access. One thing that's interesting, Mitch, that you brought up is I'm wondering, the subscription rates are not entirely accurate because a lot of them, you know, now that TV has gone digital, had to get Cablevision or Time Warner. And I'm wondering how many then subscribe for the internet access as well, you know, due to having to get TV from the providers as well. So I agree with you in saying that we do have to start surveying our families and finding out whether they are subscribing and for what reasons and whether it's for a cheaper phone rate or, you know, or TV.
Right. I mean, and I don't mean to dodge the question, but I think what I was trying to get through in a long-winded way is we're going to be relying on you very much and the people who are in touch with the communities because we're not getting that information and on that micro level.
Okay. I want to take, go ahead. Yep. You need to stand up again because they don't know who you are. We know who you are.
Sorry, Adam Blasher, the Access. I mentioned before that we were doing this survey in the city, in the city of the blind man, the one-eyed man is king. And like Dana said, you know, what you have, you should put out. And I think a lot of people, there would be a transparency if that was the case. There would be a much greater opportunity for people to integrate and create value with ISPs if they actually felt that the information that they had was shared and wasn't held back. And the third point is, when we looked into this whole broadband thing, we went, figures. Nobody's got the figures. People have got the figures. They're keeping to themselves. So why can't the city, everybody here, nobody's getting paid, right? Or a lot of people aren't getting paid. They're working for NGOs, they're spending a lot of their own time doing this. And this is a national broadband strategy. So why can't the city actually say, hey guys, we'll utilize all these people, we'll utilize all these organizations to make a survey. Any smart PhD graduate from Columbia, for example, could do something on ERTAC or SurveyMonkey in about 3 hours. And with your involvement and network, you could get that out to, let's say, what, 500,000 people in the city? That's not bad statistical data. Why doesn't that happen? It could happen tomorrow in 2 hours if there was the will.
All right. I think you. Go ahead, sir.
Mary voted with Sobro.
Well, I mentioned you, too.
Oh, yes. And I was trying to keep on the cover in case you're for public office. My next statement is not Sobro's statement, Sobro's position, because we have worked on that stuff. This is Mario Baldi's position, who has lived in the sovereign from 1968 to, well, I'm still working there. But this is the point. The word underserved is horrible. I hate it. It's not underserved. It's not willing to serve. That's what it really is. The big three, I don't subscribe to Verizon, Cablevision, and God knows who else. I use alternatives. I refuse to give them my money. Why? Because they didn't want to serve me when I lived in Hunts Point from 1994 to 2000. They refused to pull cable. I went to Jamaica for a whole week. I was watching cable. Came back to the South Bronx, no cable. Off the air, playing with that antenna with the old Radio Shack. I'm dating myself. The point is this. We sued, meaning people, under the Community Reinvestment Act. If you hold the mortgage, if you're taking money out of this community, you're going to have to put it right back in. That's what I think we need to go. You need to tell them, with all of us, pardon the word, BS. You guys have to shape what the second round and third round needs to start looking like. You're the expert. We will follow. We will do it because this is right for the community. And I'll end with this quickly. I got 20 seconds left. My witness here, my partner here. Right? We work together sober. I don't care what housing project you go to. I don't care what low income, very low income. People's got a flat screen TVs. They've got cell phones, and they've got cable, legal or illegal. They will pay for it if you bring it. If you don't give me a choice, if you tell me Pathmark is all I deserve, then I believe that. But if you bring me Whole Foods, no kudos to them, I don't need them, then I'll buy it. What they're saying is, you don't want it, you don't need it, you're not going to pay for it. No, we want it, we need it, we'll pay for it within reason, but someone's got to be the impetus and say, you need to pull it and bring it in. And it has to be done almost as a class action lawsuit. It's got to be sued just like CRA. But guys, we can talk till the cows come home and Michael Jackson makes it back, but nothing's going to change until somebody steps and say, no, this is not written right. This is what we need for this community. Thank you so much. My opinion is that it's a
So my name is Joshua Breitbart. I'm with People's Production House. What's the status of the Technology Education Fund, which is, I know, not the hugest amount. I believe it was $4 million over 7 years as part of the Verizon franchise, and maybe there's only $1.5 million now, but it's obviously much less restricted and just for the city of New York, so I wanted to know what the status is of that.
That fund will be used, obviously, as part of the match. I guess, as everyone, most people here know, that there is a 20% match required of any application for federal funding under BTOP. So obviously, that will be a part of the application. We're having conversations with Verizon as well as the cable incumbents about ways of them making either in-kind or cash contributions to increase our match so that we can increase our application. So when you ask what the status is, I'm not really sure what the...
Right, no, that's... Do you have a sense of the size of NYC's application for the Computer Center Sustainable Broadband Adoption at this point?
You know, I hate to... be a cop out, do a sort of cop out, but I've got to. I really
don't know.
Question
in the back, go ahead.
But is it, you don't know yet, or that you can't answer? It's
being debated. Okay. I mean, it's hotly debated.
Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Mary Pagano with AT&T. So I've just really enjoyed this conversation. I wanted to maybe point out a couple ideas in order for you guys to make better funds of the stimulus funding, right? So obviously, you know, the networks are getting spending more every day. We're adding more coverage. We're extending the speeds. And I had talked to Gail about this some time ago, that across the country, a lot of the school systems are looking at outfitting their kids with iPhones. They've been doing the iPod touch, and now they realize that they want more Wi-Fi because they want the kids to learn at home. And so a lot of the school, they just got a meeting with the Rundell County. They're looking to deploy quite a bit with the school system. But you know, the kids can actually use the internet in its schools, take it home, and in underserved areas right now, all of a sudden, they can teach their parents on the access of the internet. And there's already E-rate funds that could do that, so you could save your stimulus funding from having to spend it in those areas. So, and as well as Wi-Fi in the schools, the libraries, or whatever. But when I think of this rural area, right, it's really the remote areas, the areas where you can't get access to cable or to carrier service. And you've got Verizon, you've got Sprint, you've got U.S. Cellular. There's so many different options in different ways, right? So, and the speeds are getting so fast to the point that 4G is around the corner. So for anybody to think about, you know, building out infrastructure in areas that you've got to maintain and, you know, and the technology is changing so rapidly, just food for thought, right? Because obviously we'd love to see you, everybody, get broadband, and if it's not with us, with somebody else. But, you know, this is all our money, right, at the end of the day. And we want to make sure that we're using it wisely in those areas where the underserved are the areas where there is no broadband. But I do know in some areas we have 3G and 4G coverage where we don't have cable today. I've got CIOs that are using the carrier networks because they don't have Wi-Fi. I use it myself.
Mary, better wrap up.
Okay, so anyway, I just want to share that information to take a look at some of the other funds that you have so that you can...
Yeah, I mean, look, I might get in big trouble for this, but I got to tell you, I it's hard for me personally to afford an AT&T or Verizon or any other 3G network, and I'm not sure that's the solution to the broadband problem.
Thank you. Who else? Any other questions? Catherine, did you have a question over there? No? All right, go ahead, sir.
My name is John Weaver. I'm with Liberty Imaging here in New York. Weaver responded to me. I'm sorry. My name is John Weaver. I'm with Liberty Imaging here in New York. We responded to the RFI with respect to broadband to schools and public housing, and we included. We look at libraries also as being included in that. We're for profit, and so my question is: this process is underway. You've accepted these RFIs. What's going to come of that now? Is that going to be tied to this federal funding, or is that a separate funding source from the city that we can look at as possible ways in?
Yeah, we still. The bottom line is before the BTOP program came out from the federal government, the city had, through the franchise with Verizon, had come up with a fund, this technology and education fund that was referenced earlier, that we viewed as a starting point for building a program to address the broadband issue in New York City. So at the very least, the city still intends to move forward with a program that would address some component of the issue in terms of expanding public access centers, broadband availability in public access centers, as well as a program that Diamond launched or sort of was included in the Diamond study around addressing in-home adoption. And so the city is still very much committed to that program. Obviously, with what's become available through the BTOP program, we look at that as an opportunity to expand the dollars available and make that program much larger. It's kind of an unfortunate situation that we were under. I mean, we were, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, we commissioned Diamond to do this study. And 2 or 3 years ago, the city was under much different economic climate. And the thought was that we would take the results of the Diamond study and the city would fund a program. Unfortunately, because of the state of the city's economic situation, funding a program through city money is fairly difficult. But now we've got this opportunity to leverage federal funds. And so at the end of the day, the hope is we can expand the number of dollars available. We do have some money available as a result of the Verizon franchise. We also have ongoing discussions with both Time Warner and Cablevision, who we're renewing cable franchises with. And there may be an opportunity to leverage funds through that franchise. The hope is that there's a program bigger than what we initially would have been able to implement via just the monies from the cable franchises, because we're getting some additional monies from the federal government. But I think certainly the city is committed to launching a program in both of these areas, expanding access at public access centers and expanding access in terms of in-home adoption of broadband technology. And that in-home adoption program, some of you may have heard this before. We've in many public meetings spoken about the components of that, but we're really looking at a holistic approach, launching, essentially providing low-income residents with hardware, software, internet service, training, and the hope is that really does do more than just an initial one-year sort of acceptance of the broadband technology. It's something that you see a commitment to uptake of broadband technology going forward.
I just want to quickly reiterate that because we've been doing this for quite a few years, and I do think this is the time, whether there's funding this second or not, to be poised. I mean, I mentioned some groups in the Bronx previously because they've been working in the trenches. And I'm just hoping that others of you, like the wonderful Peace and Love Cafe and so on, think really creatively about how to do this in a way that is sustainable and to figure out some of the partners that are here in this room. Because, I go to a lot of schools. There's not a lot, as much as we would like, going on in the schools. And there's not as much as we would like going on at home. And the list goes on. So we could really use your help to think outside the box about how to provide these opportunities. So that's why we're here tonight, is to, don't think that there's no money. There is some funding, but there's more down the line. And if we're creative and thoughtful about it, I think it could happen. Go ahead, sir. Wait just 1 second. Go ahead.
Henry Cato from HITN. I just want to follow up with this question. Let's assume that you aggregate all those funds from different sources. What is your typical process? Does the RFI become an RFP? what would you say is the next steps?
Yeah, essentially, technically, when you issue an RFI, yes, the next step would be an RFP. I think at this point, what we're trying to do is compile the best possible application to obtain additional monies from the federal government. Once we see what we get back from the federal government, I think we'll be in a better position to evaluate what the absolute next step is. Certainly, I would imagine it is very likely that an RFP will be released shortly after the period where we see what money's available and we look to sort of roll out our program. But at this point, I think, you know, the goal from the city's perspective is just to build the best possible application and obtain as much money as possible from the federal government so that we have a comprehensive RFP that we would release.
Yeah, so what I can say, what he can say, which is that, you know, there, like we said earlier, the focus is on industrial, so I heard Sunset Park wake up. And also, there are lots of opportunities for home and school and the opportunities for figuring out ways that there are CTCs in the neighborhood. Those are some examples that we've been talking about over and over and over. And the libraries are obviously sustainable. The beacons are sustainable. The senior centers are sustainable. But think outside the box. And certainly people like Sobro have been doing that for a while. Yes, in the back.
I'm Brewer. My name is Dave Elcock from Mount Hope Housing Company. It's a basic question that I have, because Mount Hope, as you mentioned, is really making some strides in the community. We've got a real sustainable effort going and providing broadband homes. Our interest is to expand our services, not just to homes, but to the community stores and provide applications that the community bodegas and community the businesses might be able to make use of. I'm just wondering, if I don't mind me calling you Mitch, because I didn't remember your last name. I'm just wondering, how can an organization like ours lobby with an organization like yours to get that kind of powerful broadband into our NOC, or our developing NOC that we're proceeding to develop, and allow that to service our entire community and as many census blocks as you mentioned, right, as we possibly can. Right. What's the strategy?
Did you need the mic?
We should talk. I mean, if you have information on your community and you feel that your community can meet the criteria that's been set down for infrastructure funding, we would love to partner with you, and, you know, let's talk after and figure out a way to do that, because, you know, we want to bring as many communities into this program as possible. And, you know, we're sitting above 38,000 census blocks. It's very hard, you know, and that's what I was suggesting before. If there are people in this room who have, you know, the view and who can inform us on what's going on in their communities, we want to meet with you. We want to partner with you. You know, we want to figure out how.
I mean, do it means it. And there's also some state. Some of you know that there's a state CIO, and there's not millions and millions and millions, but there is some funding. So, but people have to come forward and say, this is what we've done. Mount Hope has been doing that. And others need to get on the bandwagon and participate. And I think with NYSERS is also another example. Other people haven't asked questions. Hold on. Yes, go ahead.
Hi, my name is Mark Walensky with Digital Democracy. We're an organization that builds technologies for community organizations around the world. I just want to mention that I was recently in Zimbabwe, and my cell phone worked better there than it does here. My iPhone does. And I'm wondering, in terms of the metrics that you mentioned earlier, what are you looking to really evaluate the system? What can we look to? Can we look to situations like in Bangladesh and more micro-lending projects to build out these programs through community-based organizations versus some of these major franchisees, or how can we evaluate it?
Please talk to my brother. David talked earlier about evaluation.
Do you want to? I can talk more about it, but if you have something specific,
no, I don't.
You should do it.
I think to a certain extent this really has to follow on the goals of the individual programs, right? You meet the terms of the RFP, and you say you're going to achieve a particular result. How can you measure that result? And I can't give you one answer here, because there would be as many answers as there would be projects. Are you trying to address something that's going to show the propensity for people to subscribe to commercial services, to commercial broadband services, to which they do not subscribe now? Is that your goal? How would you measure that? Would you go to provider data? Would you have self-reported data? Would you get that via survey? Would you get it via interview? As I said earlier, I think one of the things that really links all of us, though, is that all of us are going to have, at the end of the day, some means, if it's a supported proposal, and that might be first round, that might be second, wherever it goes. If it's a successful proposal, it will create more subscriptions, more hardware, more uptake, however you define that, and there's a huge range of ways to define that, right? One of those sets of things will be happening, and you can assess that through direct observation of behavior, through talking to people about what they do, through surveying people about their behaviors, about their subscription rates, about their time online, et cetera. And so those would be the kinds of things. Is it conceivable that some of the techniques that have been effective in South Asia, in Africa, in other places to propel fundamentally wireless adoption might be applied here? Sure. But that's the same kind of evaluation project, whatever the intervention is.
Question back. Yeah, you had a question. Yeah. Loud.
Okay. My name is Alameda Narasamy, and I produce community media programs through MNN, actually. So my question is this. What if, all this time the emphasis here has been on creating and building infrastructure to provide broadband access. What if you don't want to do that, but you want to partner with someone who created, but you as a media provider, as a media organization, want to utilize those services, especially for purposes like video conferencing, so communities across the country can be heard on various awareness creation media activities? Am I eligible for that?
I think the answer is you need to apply. Somebody from BronxNet suggested earlier how could they participate, and the answer is to participate is do it, is to get in the application, figure out how you can partner, and participate. Yes, we've got a half an hour because keep going.
Good question. In reference to Dimas de Jesus with Lisa Non-for-Profit Technology Association, formerly broadband infrastructure, he was talking about the problem with having to go around the telcos infrastructure or the cable guys trying to create out. Do it as a data network, or how about utilizing existing equipment? Because Verizon gives you, for like a T1 or a T3, they give you a whole multiplexer. It's an OC3 pipe, okay? And from that multiplexer, what they don't tell you is that there's extra slots there used that you could utilize. So what if we created a DS3, one of your existing networks, we pop in another DS3, but just to cater for the public access in the rural areas?
Okay, my answer would be you've got to figure out a way of making it a public purpose, but I don't know if you want to ask anything else.
Because do it is public, right? If it's a doing equipment, they have their own data rules. Like example, what we hear at the homeless shelter on First Avenue.
Okay, go ahead, Mitch.
Yeah, I mean, there are two kinds of...
Wait, let's get an answer. Hold on.
There's two kinds of stuff we get from Verizon, right? There's the stuff we get from their franchise, and there's the stuff we get because we pay a lot of money for it. The stuff we get from their franchise basically comes with an agreement that we won't do anything to compete with them. And the stuff that we pay for, we really use completely. We use it all completely, quite frankly.
Somehow we got to change that writing to complement.
We need to sign it.
To give us access.
Okay.
I'd like to help.
Okay, I appreciate it. Dr. Gandhi, Karen, go ahead.
Thanks. I'm Karen Gorgie, Borough College Computer Center for Visually Impaired People.
We do computer training, obviously, for people who are blind or visually impaired. We have a strong interest in increasing that training in homes for people. My question was specifically for Mr. Lincoln, if you could clarify what we mean exactly by the support we need to get from the state. Is it specific kind of support, or is it more that if you can show that you are dealing with particular state agencies, that that's the kind of support we're looking for? Thank you.
Okay, it's both of those. So you need to show... So it's both of those. One is that you've tied into an agency that's getting ARA investment money so that they can sort of show that you're sort of leveraging that. And the other one would be go to the NYSTAR website. And there they actually have an area where you can potentially submit your proposal. If you just fill in that form, that will qualify that you met that requirement when you submit it to the BTOP program. And all you have to do is just state that under, I forget what the numbered, you know, requirement is.
NYSTAR.
We have a very short 30 minutes left, and the key goal tonight is to get you talking to one another rather than just talking to the front of the room. So I'd like to make a couple of proposals, and this is deeply imperfect. We have about 100 people and almost as many organizations represented in here. We're cheek by jowl, and it's hard to move around. But if I could just see a real quick show of hands, I don't know if this is the right way to parse these the various endeavors in which you wish to be engaged, but how many people are here principally because you wanted to try to find a way to get technology that people do not have today, be it a computer, be it some kind of wireless device, whatever it is, for broadband access into homes? How many of you wanted to get those devices into homes? Okay, could you keep those hands up for a moment? All of you who are here who would like to partner with an organization that looks to get devices into homes, talk to one of the people who will again raise their hands high above their head, wave it back and forth. Stand, please, actually. That would be helpful. Just so people can see you, because it's hard to see the hand. Okay? Great. Thank you. Second tranche. How many people are here because you want to build or extend networks? Building and extending networks. And it's okay, you can raise your hand twice. Could you stand, please, so that people could see? If you want to work with someone who wants to build or extend a network, look at the people who are standing right now. I'm sorry?
Digital.
The digital human, yes. How many people, thank you very much. Third tranche, how many people in here have a human service that you would like to deliver online, but you don't necessarily have the technical wherewithal to do it today? In other words, is there anybody here right now who's invested in educational services, senior services, whatever community or population group you're serving, that you're trying to partner with somebody else? Could you please stand at this moment? Several of you are standing on every one of these. You're going to have a good time talking to yourself. It's a good thing. You don't have to move very far. Please, once again, these are all the people who have services. I've seen several folks who haven't stood at this point. What do you want to do? Just a couple of
I've been trying to talk.
Yes.
I'm from a research firm. We do evaluation services, like you were talking about, measurement and evaluation.
Thank you so much. I can't believe that I forgot that. How many people are interested principally in doing evaluation? Doing evaluation.
I can't stand because the pooch is right here.
Okay. So two of you, could, once again, hands up, please, or standing. Two people involved in evaluation, and I can't express again how important I think that is. Very, very, very critical. Anything else? Yes, sir.
How about people who don't want to waste $7.2 billion and make sure it's spent well, wisely, getting people broadband who need it?
If there are people
looking for anything for themselves,
if there are people involved in the larger policy questions, we've clearly had some of that discussion, and you've heard some of the positions around the room. Joshua?
Well, yeah, I do think that that's another critical area that you were talking about, which is that we need to, you know, lobby essentially. We need to back up what DeWitt's been doing. We need to make sure that rounds 2 and 3 are more favorable to New York, and also looking at the national broadband strategy, that it includes the kind of innovative work that we're doing here, even if we aren't recognized with federal funding as much as some other areas.
Yes, David.
I just have a nuts and bolts question. I'm still not clear on the proposal process. It sounds to me like Do It is putting in an umbrella proposal. But all of us are still expected to come up with our own partnerships and our own proposals and submit them. So are we submitting directly to the feds and you're doing something else to the feds? How is this working? Or are we going to partner with you if it's a good proposal?
Mitch, what do you suggest?
It's a great question. And, you know, you've got to really go through the federal rules the NTIA issued a few weeks ago to figure out what works best for you. In our case, we are going to put in an application, as Vindy described, both for public access centers and for some in-home adoption. And then we are going to go out and seek some partners. The rules aren't limited to a New York City application. If there are nonprofits here or providers or, you know, everyone else who's defined who feels that they can put in a compelling application, you know, I would never discourage that. We are going to be looking for partners. It'll depend on how much funding we can get. And I have to go back to what I said at the outset. I don't want to mislead people. We're not optimistic in this first round that there's going to be a lot of funding. So if you all feel like you've got a good program, if you're a nonprofit, if you're a community organization, whatever you are, you know, go through the rules and make that decision. We're happy to meet with you. We're happy to coordinate with you. But there is this is, again, to go back to what I said at the beginning, this is a rural round. There's a very little money to go around this round.
Who in the room is definitely planning to do a first round application in some form? Who's going to be a part of that? Definitely. And who is pretty sure they maybe would do a second round application?
Oh, this is good news.
Okay.
That's great news. We're going to push over here. Yes, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yes, sorry. My name is Brenda Jones. I'm from Mount Hope Housing Company, Vice President of Information Technology and Asset Building Program. I wanted to say that we are a little more optimistic. We have been doing stuff, you know, with technology for a long time, and we have received state funding. And so the other, when you're trying to figure out what category, we use a holistic approach. So we're here mainly because some people in here we partnered with before and we would like to partner with again. But certainly if there are people in the Bronx that are interested in finding someone to work with, we would be interested in meeting you. So that's where we stand.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, go ahead. Well, Bruce, anybody else want to? All right, go ahead.
Yeah. I just had a quick question about the RFI since maybe two or three. As Karen mentioned, she runs the Computer Center for Visually Impaired. Now, looking at what the sort of the targeted populations were, it didn't really discuss
what
various, you know, physical or other challenges. Would that still be an appropriate target population for the proposal?
Yeah, I mean, any at-risk population is a very important population.
Thank you.
Okay. Yes, go ahead, Levi.
Dennis Lane, Harlem Consumer Education Council.
A bit louder, please.
Dennis Lane, Harlem Consumer Education Council. I think the elephant in the room is that we've been talking a lot about infrastructure, which is damn important, excuse my French. But I'd like to know, if we were to walk out of here and run into five people or come up on the subway in the Bronx and talk to them, what would we say? What would we talk about? What would we say broadband is? And I think that's where the education also needs to start. And what are we doing about education?
I could just say from my perspective, that's what we've, you know, trying to go around to the different boroughs try to do. Obviously, it's changing. But I'm afraid from what I see is it can change, but there's still going to be a whole group of people who are not going to have access, either financially or in terms of hardware. And I think there may be some changes in how we deliver it or what the mechanism is, but I can promise you that at least in my lifetime, that situation is not going to change quickly. And so I think that what we need to do is to try to come up with partners so that we, to me, what the broadband means, you go home, somebody can help you with the homework, and it's fast and it's cheap. And the same thing for seniors, and the same thing for people who are looking for jobs. If you're in a CTC, any kind of a computer training center in a neighborhood today, it is packed with people. I'm sure anybody who's operating them knows resumes and looking for a job. You can only go in the library sometimes for a short period of time unless there's a different kind of library. So the line is long for the computers that are there. So I'm just saying this, that I think you're right that it has different definitions, but I guess my focus would be we have got to find partners and opportunities in the neighborhoods that are underserved or unserved or whatever the cockamamie term is that the federal government wants to use.
I would just say, I don't mean to harp on this, but we really are at risk of finding urban areas in the same position we were with the Universal Service Fund, which subsidized telecommunication services for rural areas, where money is being drained out of urban areas to subsidize rural areas, and at the same time, urban areas aren't being served. And I'm concerned I see that same pattern happening here. There is a movement, and I understand it. I mean, this is, let's not forget, this came out of an economic stimulus program, and the economic stimulus program's objectives were to put people to work and to put shovels in the ground quickly, and to have measurable, sustainable objectives. And so, if you can say, we've dug pipes to all these rural communities in X amount of time and given them news, that's a very compelling kind of argument. It's a softer argument to say, there are people who just in urban areas can't afford, and we have to pick up adoption. That's harder to measure. It's harder to show how it's sustained. And it becomes a little bit political, but I'm concerned that's where we're headed. We are going to be subsidizing rollouts to rural areas while our own folks can afford broadband.
And okay, good question.
I'm
go ahead.
Concerned that's where we're headed.
Yep, cool.
I'm from the Institute for Family Health. We're a network of federally qualified health centers, community health centers in the South Bronx and Manhattan. And we have a patient portal, which we're trying to encourage patients to participate in, which will help them with their health, hopefully reduce health care costs. They can schedule appointments, communicate with their doctors so they don't have to pay a copay, and they can go in, they can reorder their meds online, they can be prescribing. We're looking to partner because we're just in a survey of our patients to find out, do they use the internet? Would they use the internet to become more interactive with their healthcare? So we're just compiling the results as we speak. And hopefully we're trying to figure out why patients wouldn't be signing up for the service and using the service to improve their health. So we're looking to partner, possibly because we think it has to do with hardware and access.
And we know from talking to the feds and Congress and the NTIA that's hugely important in terms of us making our case to the feds. They said if you can not only show that it's helping this part, broadband part, but you're helping other parts of stimulus, like health information technology, that's a big advantage. So, for all of you who are looking into making your own applications, if you can show that your application will not only bring broadband, but will bring health information technology, and the Department of Health has a very big telehealth initiative going on right now, or IT health initiative, and other stuff that's an emphasis, you've got to make that case, and that's the case we're trying to make. So that's a very important
question. Is the Department of Health also looking towards, do they have stimulus funding that is separate for electronic health records, or is it all going through you guys?
No, that's a much larger allocation of ARRA than broadband.
So again, I always think outside the box. It is true that the City Department of Health has funding for what I would consider something that could be thought of more creatively. For instance, if you're seniors, and I know this is being discussed, and you are homebound, how can electronic health records funding help that senior get better health care, help her or his provider help her in a better fashion. Go through OATS would be my suggestion. But the point is, how, for instance, can the public access centers also be part of these issues? So you really got to think beyond what you have and think more creatively about how to expand the funding.
That's a great start to the meeting.
Yes. All right. So we're going to, let me tell you, we're going to stop. People should feel free to come up and ask questions. We hope, thanks to Dean Birdsill, that you've been able to share. Let me just thank, I want to thank Sam Wong from our office who put this together, Kunal Mahatra and Young Toy, and certainly John Albert and the amazing staff. Thanks to Joshua Breisbart that we're here. Feel free to call us. You're all going to be on the listserv, and feel free to get in touch. Yes. Oh, yeah. And sign in. Must sign in with Sam Wong if you didn't already.
You just never expect
it. Okay. There you go.
Council members, continue.
Of course. Very high.